Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:21 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time, and today is July 28th. I thought we'd kick off today with Asia, where Vietnam has bounced from around the 800 level, but I think it's important to highlight that it was right on the cusp of breaking out back in November of last year. Then it failed to sustain that breakout, pulled back to the lower side of the range, and subsequently it was one of the first markets to pull back sharply, and it encountered resistance in the region of 1,000 and the 200-day moving average in late January. So that was a lead indicator. Then it pulled back very sharply, and Vietnam has been one of the countries that has been most effective in curtailing the spread of the coronavirus. They've had no deaths, but they've just had three cases in Da Nang, and they've decided that they're going to evacuate 80,000 people, and they're going into lockdown for that particular area. They're going to try their best to continue to contain the disease. Obviously, this is a very clear example of how even the most successful countries are still finding it difficult to keep a lid on infections. It's almost like whack-a-mole, that once somewhere tends to get a handle on the infection rate and relaxes even a little, then it starts to pop back up again. I think that it's not appropriate to refer to this as a second wave. The simple fact of the matter is that we're still dealing with the continued stress of this whole environment. But one thing that we can say is that when we look at the upward dynamic that we had in here today for the Vietnamese market, it does suggest that investors are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to some of these emerging market countries, that they will be able to get the to contain the risk to the economy. And Vietnam is a high growth area. It's one of the places that is likely to benefit most from movement of manufacturing capacity out of China, particularly low-end manufacturing. And then you have the additional potential that investors are generally going to be more favorably disposed towards emerging markets with a weaker dollar environment overall. It's also an important characteristic when we look at India. The Indian market has now pushed back above the trend mean. The Nifty is back above the 11,000 level. It has continued to hold a sequence of higher reaction lows over the course of this 4-month period. The amplitude of the ranges has compressed. The last three have been really quite similar, although the most recent is certainly somewhat smaller than the one before it, and we continue to see the index marching higher. When we then think about, for example, the Philippines, it's a similar condition. We've had a rebound. Now it looks more like Vietnam. We've had a little pullback in the last week or two, and some evidence of steadying in the region of the upper side of the underlying trading range. It's going to have to, of course, follow through on the upside in here tomorrow. Then when we look at Indonesia, it also pulled back extraordinarily violently, but it has been marching higher over the course of the last while. Now, when we look at the Asia dollar index, it's obviously heavily weighted by the renminbi, and it is right in the region of the trend mean. If it sustains a move above the trend mean, we're back in a demand-dominated environment for Asian currencies generally. But when we then think about the fact that the renminbi today closed right around the 7 mark, it does appear to be a level that the Chinese are willing to defend, but that it's unlikely we're going to see the renminbi strengthen beyond it in any kind of dynamic manner. That willingness of China to weaken their currency is something that will affect the Asia dollar index. But we've also seen that, for example, one of the weaker currencies in the region, which is the Indian rupee, has also been steadying over the last 4 months. One of the strongest in the region, which is the Philippine peso, has spent most of the last 18 months strengthening and was at a new recovery high in here today. Then when we think about the Indonesian rupiah, it's been really quite steady, having pulled back very sharply at the beginning of the year. It recouped the entire decline and is now steadying. So one thing that we can certainly say is that Asian currencies are not nearly as volatile as the dollar has been. When we look at the dollar index, it was a little steadier in here today, but this is a very significant breakdown. Now, we do have a short-term oversold condition, but the simple reality is that the primary factors that have contributed to strengthen the dollar over the course of the last few years have been eroded. There is no longer an interest rate differential. The simple fact is that the quantitative tightening program that the Federal Reserve engaged in from the end of 2017 through until approximately September of last year was a fundamental tailwind for the US dollar because it represented a contraction in supply. Well, that's certainly over. Since then, the size of the Fed's balance sheet hasn't quite doubled, but it's really not all that far off it either. So we have a massive additional supply of US dollars. And then there is the additional point that some of the exceptionalism that the USA has enjoyed in terms of economic activity has been eroded as well, and not least because of the haphazard way in which the coronavirus response has been managed. So these are, I think, some of the more significant factors that are contributing to dollar weakness. The important point is that it does not look like they're going to be simply addressed in a timely manner. And I think that's one of the other important points, that we do have a short-term oversold condition for the US dollar, but it does not look like it's about to be repaired in the short term. Therefore, it is time to start thinking about commodities, because generally commodities do well when there is a weaker dollar. Part of the reason for that is suddenly all of that dollar-denominated debt in the emerging markets that people have been worried about for most of the last 2 years, well, every day that the dollar gets weaker, that debt becomes easier to manage. That opens up the capability to extend credit. Then where does that credit go? Well, in emerging markets, a lot of it will go towards infrastructure development, and the continuous commodity index has pushed on and is now above the 200-day moving average. It has failed to sustain the move below 350, and therefore the next area of potential resistance is probably somewhere around the 440 area. Now, when we think about copper, it's often referred to as Dr. Copper because it's such an integral part of global infrastructure development. The price has been ranging just below 300 cents for the bulk of the last 2 weeks, but the reality here is it doesn't look like anything other than a consolidation following a very impressive rebound. The most important thing it's done has been to break the downtrend, and really a sustained move below the trend mean would be required to question that we're not back in a demand-dominated environment. Nickel prices are also continuing to improve here and are back above the trend mean. This has been really a very choppy trend over the course of the last few years, but the simple fact of the matter is that when you look at the new battery chemistries that are being developed and the growth trajectory for electric vehicles against a background where the cost of carbon continues to pause here in the region of its all-time highs, but it is something that has got a clear backing from government. And it's in the government's interest, particularly in Europe, to have a high carbon price, and they want it to be higher. Well, that is creating additional interest in renewable energy. So the wind sector broke out last week or 2 weeks ago. It's now somewhat overbought, and there's probably, I think, more likely than not going to be some pause of consolidation here. So it's probably not something to chase in the short term simply because of that overbought condition, but it is likely to have a medium term tailwind from the direct policy initiatives that are being put in place in Europe. Depending on how the US election goes, then the infrastructure spending that is likely in the next administration will be heavily influenced by policy. NextEra Energy is another renewable energy utility, and it has paused in the region of its trend mean. Brookfield Renewable Partners, a fund, has paused in the region of its trend mean, but it is at least steadying here in the area of around the $50 level. These are all doing well as a result of, and despite the fact that they're not especially influenced by Europe, they're all benefiting from this green energy revolution and the clear support of government to ensure that it is successful. Regardless of whether it is in fact the best course of action is largely irrelevant any longer, because that is the clear lesson from regulatory arbitrage. When governments insist that they are going to do whatever is necessary to make a sector successful, well, if you don't fight the Fed, it doesn't pay to fight governments either when they're imposing taxes on any other alternative. So the solar ETF is also somewhat overbought as it tests the highs from back in 2014 and 2015, but it is likely to benefit overall. Now, I think the big question for a lot of these investments is going to be, how does oil perform? It was again in negative territory, and it's really been inert over the course of the last 2 months. Now, that's not especially normal for what is historically an extremely volatile price series. We have, on the one hand, the potential for additional stimulative measures. On the other, there is continued spread of the coronavirus, which is hampering the return to normal activity around the world. So those are two factors that are containing this, the ability of oil to rally or indeed to decline. But it needs to hold that $40 area if the potential for additional upside is to be given the benefit of the doubt. Gold prices in here today were really quite volatile. They got all the way up to about $1,980 and just over $2,000 on the futures contract, but were as low as $1,900. Now, we're getting some volatility coming through following six really impressive days on the upside. So it's not at all beyond the bounds possibility that, given the proximity of the previous peak and the big psychological 2,000 level, on top of the fact that the price could still pull back by $327 and still be in the region of the trend mean. So there is no doubting that we do have a short-term overbought condition, and that some consolidation is increasingly likely following what has been an incredibly impressive breakout over the course of the last 12 months. Silver is also a price series that has been doing fantastically well, but today was a very volatile trading session, and it has finished out the day pretty much unchanged, but the amplitude of trading on the day is in excess of $3. And what this is potentially suggesting is that we are due a consolidation, and that it may have begun in here today. Of course, the most important thing silver needs to do is to hold the breakout above $20. And I think that is one of the would be one of the clearest signs that we're back in a demand dominated environment, that not simply that it completes the base formation, but that it also holds the breakout. That's the condition for a first step above the base. It convinces investors that higher prices can be sustained. And it's important to remind ourselves that you don't get a bull market all in one go, that there is ebb and flow, and that the best time to buy these types of very volatile instruments is following pullbacks. Now, when we then think about the gold miners, they have also done really very well and were pretty much unchanged in here today. Now, obviously, if gold prices consolidate, it's reasonable to anticipate we will also see some consolidation in the gold miners. They have more than doubled over the course of just the last 4 months, so it's not at all surprising that we are due some consolidation. When we then think about some of the other sectors that have done spectacularly well over the last few months, well, we did have these big downside key reversals in the middle of July. They didn't immediately have downside follow through, but the prices have been pulling back, and now Amazon is back to exactly the 3,000 level. It's a natural area where we might anticipate some support coming through. If we look at just the last few months, it paused at 3,000, or it is pausing at 3,000. It paused below 2,500 and just above it. It also paused around 2,000. Amazon has a history of pausing around these big psychological levels. And what's also interesting is that the other e-commerce success stories have also paused. So Shopify is pausing here around that big psychological $1,000 level. Etsy, which has also been doing really extremely well, has also paused in just the last couple of weeks, but it has really put in a spectacular advance, going from approximately 30 to almost 120 in the space of 5 months. Now, it's overbought. So far, the reaction we've seen is relatively similar sized to the pause that we had between approximately May and the beginning of June. So as long as it is holding the lows, then this is just another consolidation. I do think that it is likely the complexion of the stimulus package currently being put together in the USA is going to have an impact on these companies. The $600 a week that was given to in addition to normal unemployment benefits to millions of people in the USA has plugged a hole in consumer demand. If those payments are curtailed, then it's likely to leave a hole in the ability of people to spend on discretionary items. One thing I thought was interesting is that some of the big ticket items that people are buying are these recreational vehicles. So Thor Industries, having contracted significantly from the peak in 2017, has now broken its downtrend, and it's certainly overbought in the short term, but this does still look like a recovery. Winnebago Industries is also something that has rebounded in an extremely impressive manner, and it is now consolidating above the previous peaks. Then when we think about the fact that tourism represents a massive source of income for the luxury goods sector, Kering in here today, which is the owner of Gucci, is now encountering resistance in the region of its trend mean. LVMH, which is by far the largest of the big luxury goods companies, is right in the region of its trend mean. When we think about some of these big consumer companies like L'Oreal, they've done better, and not least because their products are cheaper, they're less dependent on tourist demand. But I think that is the clear delineation. It's anything that's really influenced by tourism rather than broad consumer demand. There are definitely two different sides of the global consumer market. Some are doing better than others. And I think it's this exact same kind of delineation is likely to remain a factor in the global economy and in the stock market generally for the foreseeable future, and at least until we get to a point where a vaccine is being widely or made widely available. The Nasdaq Biotech Index continues to pause here and has held the breakout so far. It's still a little overbought in the short term, but this does look like a recovery candidate. I think the clearest catalyst for growth in the sector would be if the permitting process for new therapies was streamlined. I do think there is a good chance of that, not least because with massive deficits, one of the biggest cost centers for just about every country is healthcare, and anything that can be done to reduce those costs should be embraced. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.